Goldie is a case study in marketing for many reasons. How you converted a commodity product into a brand.
That journey was not easy to enter the market without much money. The only thing that you had your own confidence in your product. The biggest challenge is how to ensure that every demography is able to accept our taste. And this is where we make around 11 types of garam masala. And each garam masala is catering to one particular taste palette. We have more than 1700 distributors in the country. And out of which, most of them are handpicked by my father and uncle.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them have their second and third generation working with us. Next, we have more than 4,000 people working with us. We don't call them employees, we call them Goldie family members.
Mm-hmm.
And in the office we are sitting right now, there are more than 100 people who are with us since more than 35 years.
When we started our career in wealth management, my life used to revolve only in South Bombay or in a certain part of Delhi. Now, I find myself in Kanpur, in Nagpur, in Goa, in various parts of the country. What is actually happening in Tier 2 India today that wealth managers are ending up here? What does it take to build a hugely successful brand in an otherwise commoditized business? How does on-ground distribution work for one of India's largest FMCG brands? How does a brand decide to choose celebrity endorser? How does second-generation wealth get created out of Tier 2 India? Today, to discuss all of these issues, I have with me Sudeep Goenka, the director of Goldie Group, which is behind the hugely successful Goldie Masale brand. I hope you'll enjoy this one. Sudeep, for me, Goldie is a case study in marketing for many reasons. The first, which I am personally very excited about, is how you converted a commodity product into a brand. For example, if you look at today, let's say coriander powder or dhania powder, it would be available at every store even before Goldie was there. When Goldie came in, you made it into a brand that people now ask for Goldie's coriander powder. Tell me a little bit about how that journey happened of converting a commodity into a brand.
So I think the journey started in the year 1980 with my father, Mr. Som Goenka, and my uncle, Mr. Suren Gupta, who are childhood friends. And they found a problem that good quality spices was not available in the market. So they thought to come with a branded spices. And in those days, it was more or less used as a commodity and in open market.
So wo loose bikta tha us time pe. It was sold.
If we see our grandmothers, wo hamesha loose hi they used to buy. Even to an extent, our mothers also. Our generation, if you tell them to buy anything loose, will be a difficult choice to do it. So they identified that problem. And also over the years, the knowledge of spices has decreased. So the trust in branded spices has grown much more. Coming back, that journey was not easy to enter the market without much money, without having a celebrity like today. And going to different customers across the city, across the country, across the state, and convincing them to buy your brand. The only thing that you had your own confidence in your product. So the biggest testimony that my father and uncle have set from the day one is all the spices that are made in our factory goes to our own retail shop, which is five generations old.
Okay.
And our houses also buy the Goldie brand spices from the same shop.
Got it.
So anything which you don't use yourself, you are never confident about it. And in sales and marketing, I believe truth is always what you consume yourself. So you cannot sell a product which you don't consume yourself. Second, the biggest confidence that we got coming from a city of Kanpur, the oath my elders took, we will never make anything injurious to health. So every product that will be made will be absolutely stringent on quality. Norms will be absolutely world-class standards.
And back then, there used to be adulteration happening, I'm sure.
Adulteration happens today also. But with media, it has reduced. But back then, it was much easier. But again, when the principle was right, mm-hmm. that we will not make anything injurious to health, and whatever is made in the plant will be consumed by us as consumers and not as brand owners. Mm-hmm. So that really made it, that gave us a lot of confidence. But to create commodity into a brand, I think not only Goldie, if you see across India, all the spices brands have gone through the test of times of minimum 3 to 4 decades. Mm-hmm. It is a very slow process movement. And I always say spices is not an FMCG. It is not a fast moving consumer good. It is a slow moving consumer good.
Why do you say that?
So Sandeep, if you like a certain pav bhaji and some brand of spices is being used in your house, no matter how much I publicize, no matter how much I spend on radio, newspaper, BTL, ATL, your wife will never change it. Any chef across the world will never change the ingredients because his customer is loyal based on that recipe. So one ad really clicks to my mind from childhood. It's like Melody Khao Khud Jaan Jao. So you have to enter the kitchen of that consumer and you have only one chance. Only one chance you have to prove yourself that your product is good.
And this is very interesting, Sudeep. I want to like understand the buying behavior when it comes to products like spices. How much of that is determined by the distributor who is offering that product or the retailer who's offering that product? And how much of it is dependent on the customer who's buying? And then I want to also understand, like, how do you then sell in that context? Who is your actual decision maker? Because I feel that sometimes it's the retailer who's the decision maker who decides which brand will appear at which part of the shelf. But what you are saying is also a different point, which is that the consumer gets used to a taste and then they choose which brand.
So I will define this in two phases. 20 years back when modern trade did not exist that much and the consumer did not have the privilege of picking the product from the shelf by himself or herself.
Okay.
There the main decision maker was the shopkeeper. And the shopkeeper has always been very genuine to the consumer. That is my belief. Because his first loyalty is that the customer should come back to buy the same product again. So, and even that shopkeeper was like a child or a father figure. And through generations in one locality of Nariman Point, that one shopkeeper was serving so many societies.
Sure.
So at that time, shopkeeper was definitely the biggest decision maker. And till date, shopkeeper has the biggest say. Number one, again, he ensures the consumer gets the right product. Number two, he ensures he has a decent margin. And number three, most important, there needs to be a repeat order. But after that, when the consumer is buying that product and it's going to their house, then the product has to speak. And the products has to speak in terms of taste, in terms of smell. And very ironical example, if you go to a restaurant, you like the food, everything is nice, but the real test happens next morning and you have to ensure your stomach is not aching next morning.
Yeah.
So you could have had the best of the food that night, but next morning is our real testimony that the product is fine and you will go back to that restaurant to eat.
Yeah.
So this is where the decision maker was retailer many years back. But now with modern trade coming in, consumers pick their products from the shelf by themselves. And there is a lot of awareness. Post-COVID also, I think what has changed consumer is no more getting mesmerized by branding.
Mm-hmm.
They are very keen to understand the ingredients of the product. They are very keen to understand how the product is manufactured. And they do a lot of research on different social media platforms.
So I'll come back to this one because this is very interesting. There's a lot of awareness about the quality of food, etc. But what you're saying, Sudeep, is there are two parts. Earlier, the behavior was driven by the retailer. And I suspect even today in areas where modern trade does not exist in the way we are used to in cities, maybe that behavior is still intact. And secondly, then there is areas where modern trade is there where you are directly selling to the consumer. Obviously, quality of product is very important. But the question is then when you're marketing to them in the scenario that both of these are coexisting, right? How do you run a marketing strategy around that?
Very good question. Now, when I speak to my family doctor, he says life was very easy before. The patient used to never come to me and question that the paracetamol you are giving has these many attributes which I found on 1mg.com. We have a very clear strategy. It is always consumer first. That is why over the years, Goldie's pricing has been very nominal with the best quality. I don't think these two worlds coexist. I believe it is always the consumer, and most of the times the consumer, if he's going to modern trade, that will be maybe a weekly affair or a fortnight affair. But instantly, if he wants something, he will buy from the local mom and shop store. And even in tier 3 cities, the kind of exposure the consumer has, because he's traveling to tier 1 city also. He's traveling and looking at the brands which are available at the shelf in the top modern trade store across India. And that is where the branding happens. So he thinks it's a very good brand. I can be very candid. I see in our plant with so many labors wearing a luxury brand t-shirt. From where it has come, I don't know. But the aspiration to wear that luxury brand t-shirt is coming from their exposure to tier 1 city or the malls they have gone to.
Interesting.
So this is where they are sure that this brand has a very good quality because so and so person has been wearing it. In our industry, if that modern trade chain has kept Goldie, it means the kind of testings, the kind of plant testings they have done, and the kind of entire auditing system they have done, it means this is a genuine brand. So when they come back to their city, they want the same brand.
Interesting. And therefore, does it mean that the focus from a marketing perspective would have moved from retailer margins to branding? When you think about your marketing spends, is that playing out? Because to talk to the customer, you will have to be in front of the customer and therefore branding costs will be higher.
So I think in spices, the target channel has to be very clear. And this is where most brands lose. They try to have this journey to become pan-India across the different demography at once. So we were very clear from day one. We never wanted to start very fast and we don't try to do that. We know our target consumer very well. And our initial focus was always on retail. And that is housewives. And during COVID, it was proven that nothing was working except the housewives. Even you must have cooked food at your house.
Tried to, it didn't work out.
Maybe you didn't use the right Goldie product, so it didn't work out. We were very clear, it is about the retail and the housewives. Then the new segment that popped up over the years is Horeca, hotel, restaurant and catering.
Horeca, okay. Yeah. Hotel, restaurant and catering. Okay.
There the requirements are different, the pack sizes are different. Also in India, if you travel across the state of Uttar Pradesh itself, people say India is a diverse country with so many countries in it. I feel every state has so many countries in it.
Got it.
You come from Mumbai, the taste palette in Malal would be very different from Vashi.
Correct.
Because of the people living there. The taste palette in Pune is very different from Nasik.
Yeah.
So for us, the biggest challenge is how to ensure that every demography is able to accept our taste. And this is where we make around 11 types of garam masala. And each garam masala is catering to one particular taste palette.
So the garam masala that I'm buying from Goldie in Delhi is different from the garam masala that I'm buying from Goldie in Kanpur.
Depends where you're buying it. If you're buying the garam masala in Punjabi Bagh and in the same demography you're buying it in Kanpur, could be same. But that customer would know that which garam masala I need to buy. For example, the garam masala used in East India has more cinnamon in it. The garam masala which you get in Goa has more red chili in it.
The moment you say that, I'm thinking now about the logistics of this. How are you making the logistics last mile happen on this particular side?
It's very simple. The taste palette doesn't change much from Goa to Uttar Pradesh. It changes a lot. So it's not that what I'm selling in UP, I'm also selling in Goa, or what I'm selling in Goa, I'm also selling in Bombay. So it's not very difficult, but yes, it's complex. And this is where I think later I'll tell more how we have been able to indulge more technology, more systems in the organization.
That will be interesting. So the one big investment you made was getting Salman Khan on board to market the Goldie brand. I want to understand, because from the amount of money that you spent, I'm assuming is a large amount of money, on somebody like him, you could have potentially got any other brand ambassador. What was the approach behind selecting a brand ambassador? Like, how did you end up at Salman?
Or that money could have gone to the wealth management managers rather spending to marketing.
This will be a high return on investment, so we'll get more money later.
It was not a instant decision, and me, my elder brother Akash, and younger brother Shubham, it took us good 5-7 years to convince our elders to have a celebrity. The question was, why celebrity? So a time comes, I think, in the journey of every brand, every organization, it's a, in the S curve of economics, there's a point of inflection.
Yeah.
And we thought this is the time in Goldie, there's a point of inflection. We were doing well in North India and we wanted to become a national brand and start the journey of a global brand. And lot of discussion happened. In fact, to tell you, Sandeep, at that time, across the food brands, there were only female celebrities, and every spice ad or the food ad used to have kitchen shown. We took a bold decision. We broke that rule or regime that was happening. So the question is very common to me, and I have kind of learned it, all the answers inside me after so many interviews. The first question is, why Salman Khan? And that's your question. So what Goldie has as an attribute is, first, honesty. Secondly, as I told you, we'll not make anything injurious to health. Number three, we have more than 1,700 distributors in the country, and out of which most of them are handpicked by my father and uncle. And most of them have their second and third generation working with us. Next, we have more than 4,000 people working with us. We don't call them employees. We call them Goldie family members. And in the office we are sitting right now, there are more than 100 people who are with us since more than 35 years. So this attribute of a legacy and a family environment was number three. Number four, with age, there has to be a product which is good for health. And if you see over the years, spices was inculcated in our palate not because of taste, but because of the medicinal value it had.
Yeah.
And that is why ancestors have introduce spices in our palate mm-hmm. globally. Mm-hmm. And eventually we acquired the taste. So fourth was health. Number five, most important, and that is our tagline, Goldi jahan jaye rishte banaye. And this is where we launched so many products other than spices. Is we make this kalava, okay. we make gulal in Holi, havan samagri in Navratra, sevaiya for Ramzan. So it has to be a universal thing, and where we are also kind of sensitive towards society mm-hmm. and a helping hand. So these attributes eventually came down to a celebrity, Salman Khan, who has a mass following. Mm-hmm. And spices as a product is consumed by a 2-year-old child and also a 90-year-old person. So it is not a product which is not consumed by no one. Mm-hmm. So Salman had a mass appeal, and even my son or my grandfather knew the name very well and they could relate to him. So all these things came together. It took 5 years. It didn't took 5 years to decide on Salman. It took 5 years to decide on celebrity. And eventually we signed Salman some 5.5 years back, and it has reaped benefits. And I also lost 10 kgs in the journey.
But what has the impact been? Has it the impact been in the margin, or the impact has been in the top line growth? Where would you say the most direct impact of getting a celebrity would have been?
So on a television, if you open, and if I ask you which ad did you see on a specific channel yesterday, I'm sure you won't remember it.
Correct.
It's all about attracting the eyeballs. And some people you connect right away, some people you meet 10 times, you still don't connect. So celebrity attracts eyeballs and has a good image in the subconscious by what he's talking, what he's doing with his own imagery. What changed in Goldi earlier, before Salman, if we were going down south to Karnataka, we had to explain what Goldi is, what kind of products we have, what legacy we have, what range we have. So this way we were kind of known to them even before we went to them. Secondly, what happened, people started taking us more seriously. And when I say people, it was the distribution network.
But Goldi was already a large brand by then, like at least in the distributor segment. So which are these distributors that you're talking about?
Two kind of distributors. Number one, which were already there with us. And number two, who were going to be with us. The distributors who were with us, they saw that if such a big investment is being done, and I have heard these stories from my distributors because I travel across the country and meet them. And they said, भैया विश्वास हो गया कि अगले 30 साल तो हमारा ब्रांड चलेगा आपके साथ. Because you've invested so much today, it means you have belief for next 30 years. Secondly, the distributors who were on the edge to join with us or not to join with us, they took the decision right away to join with us. Thirdly, outside of India, the brand got recognition right away. And we became the talking point, and it was about us to reach to them, and they started accepting the product right away.
Amazing. So it's a because when I was looking at what I was reading about Goldi's business performance was that the top line revenue has nearly doubled since the time this event has happened. So it's obviously clearly reaping the benefits, potentially more than what a wealth manager would have given you. But the other thing is that I've also seen that you have a, you started from spices, but you opened up a whole new category of other products. Let's say in the noodle segment, you also mentioned some of these religious products that you make. What is the product development approach that you have, Sudeep? Like, does it start from the customer, that our customer who already knows the Goldi brand and they have a gap, that is what you'll fill? Or is it from inside out that you say that, okay, I can create a good noodles brand and I should launch that?
Very good question, Sandeep. And I believe if you remember our childhood, if we wanted stationery, we used to go to a specific area and a specific shop.
Correct.
If you want to buy vegetables, you would travel somewhere else.
Hmm.
Now the time has come where people are really busy. And that is why people go to malls a lot. It's like one location, every solution is available and you can shop everything there.
Hmm.
This is where we thought that our consumer is confident about the brand.
Hmm.
But he needs certain products which are not readily available at that particular store for them, or the products which are available, he's not confident of it.
Mm-hmm.
In Goldie, we are known to introduce new products every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But the R&D takes a lot of time. It probably takes 2-3 years to launch a product. And the reason was, from a marketing perspective, to be connected to the consumer all the time.
Mm-hmm.
India is full of festivals, and I believe all of us Indians live our life for festivals, or to get our children married, or to build a house. I don't see any other ambition Indians have in general. So that is why we launched Gulal in Holi. That is why we launched Sevaiyan for Ramzan, Havan Samagri for Navratra, and all these different products for Goldie to become a part of their happiness. It's not about eating food. If some people are dieting, they might think, I don't want to eat much, but you can celebrate with Goldie Gulal.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where the emotional connect comes. When you are part of their rituals, part of their festivals, I think that is where the brand becomes your own.
Mm-hmm.
And a very famous beverage brand, I used to work there in US, is always talking about happiness. So that is one, and again, living to our slogan, Jahan Jahan Rishte Banaye.
So I think it was more driven from the association that Goldie has in the mind of the consumer, which is around happiness, about relationships, and whatever are the areas where they associate. So eventually Goldie can actually be a much bigger brand, and spices may be one part of it in the long run.
So very interesting story. When I came from US and we had a discussion with the sales team, distribution channel. So typically what was happening in Indian household, I don't know when boys went to kitchen, probably now they go more often, but 15-20 years back, around age of 16 or 17, especially the daughter was taken into kitchen by the mother to introduce food and cooking, and the reason we know why. So it came to our mind that it will take 16-17 years for the generation to know what Goldie is.
Mm-hmm.
That is where the whole idea came to launch Goldie 1-1 noodles. Why not start at the age of 3 and instill Goldie brand in their mind? Again, coming back to my earlier answer or conversation, health and good quality product was most important to us. So we made Goldie 1-1 noodles in rice bran oil. And we are among the only few manufacturers in the country who make in rice bran oil.
Most of the others would use
palm oil.
Hmm.
So from the marketing perspective, we thought, let's start the journey at age of 3.
Mm-hmm.
And from a health perspective, make it in rice bran oil so that mothers are less guilty or not guilty about making the children have noodles. So this is one thought process, how we choose a different line of product from both the perspectives to solve a particular problem and ensure the, along with taste, the hygiene is also taken care of.
The health part is very interesting to me because, and I'll talk about how it potentially impacts your margins and P&L. But at the outside, it seems like there's this whole revolution happening about awareness around health issues. There are influencers like Food Farmer who are talking about the fact that how brands are not doing right by the consumer. I'm sure there is a intent for every brand to move towards the healthier side, but this potentially comes with compromises on the profitability. How do you at Goldie balance these two things out?
So if the journey is not a 100-meter race, and if it is a marathon, I think the answer is there. My uncle always says, life is not a 100-meter race, it's a marathon, where pace and endurance has to be balanced. Mm-hmm. So we were not here to solve a problem in one day. It will take time, and to create a brand and enter the heart of people. Bottom line is very simple, and it might sound philosophical, but it doesn't need much for a human to survive. And every segment people are there who are surviving with any kind of resources they have. What is more important, are we living our values? And as a second generation, the legacy that has been given to us, mm-hmm. are we ready to live that marathon and pass it to the next generation? That will, bottom line has to be positive. And I think any business done right, bottom line is positive. But only to have a bigger bottom line is not the end goal. How it can be done, increase the top line to the next level, and then the bottom line is taken care end of the day in the bank account.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think and this short term versus long term is a real issue, I guess, for people who are sort of public listed. Maybe the quarterly numbers have that pressure, and therefore they end up making some of these compromises. But when you priced, let's say, 1-1 versus the other brands, which were less healthy, did you decide to price it at premium or did you decide to price it at par?
So that's a very good question, Sandeep, and I can answer. It has compelled other brands to reduce their bottom line, because if you are going your own way, and Goldie has luckily never followed anyone, mm-hmm. and we were late entrants into the category. I'm not saying we are very big into this category, but it has made other people think. Mm-hmm. And this is what my grandfather always says, that the life journey has to be of utho aur uthao. Mm-hmm. We don't compromise on the packing material. We will not reduce the weight of the product because our production cost is going high after a certain point. Mm-hmm. Because end of the day, it has to satisfy your palate.
Yeah.
So, and some brands which are already established, mm-hmm. which are become generic, so they don't have challenges. But it's about giving some extra value mm-hmm. to your consumer, which he's wanting in today's times where food has become of an imperative importance.
Yeah.
Nobody compromises on the quality of food today.
Yeah, makes sense. I think it's very interesting. You caused others to lower their prices. In a way, you actually priced a great product below potentially the market rates. One interesting trend that is happening is around quick commerce. Brands must have got to face a whole new challenge of distribution, which was not existing a few years ago. How has quick commerce impacted brands, and then specifically maybe Goldie's business also?
I still believe in India, a lot of the families don't believe in chat mangni patbeya. So quick commerce is definitely growing, but still it's a time, it will take a lot of time to evolve to a level where it has to be. There is a segment of people who are not able to go to the marketplace to shop. Mm-hmm. So for them, it's very, very important to take the help of quick commerce. We are definitely present there. But a lot of times the housewives or the chefs or the end user wants to feel the product before he or she buys it. Mm-hmm. And I think most of the times quick commerce shopping is done for the product which has already been felt or used by the consumer before. Especially in our industry. It doesn't go same with the electronic industry or the fashion industry, But yes, in food industry, it is growing. But maximum business is still on the ground and it will take time to evolve. Secondly, all these modern trade chains or the local kirana walas have adopted quick commerce themselves.
Through WhatsApp.
Through WhatsApp, or they have built their own apps where the customers can order and the service is done at a switch at within an hour. So some experience have happened where a lot of companies have invested in quick commerce. You will know better than me. But with time, they have vanished. So any quick commerce or e-commerce or business which is complemented by a brick and mortar model, I think will survive and do very well in future. That is why these e-commerce or quick commerce portals of the stores which have an on-ground presence is much more successful than who are only quick commerce in the country.
Got it. I think that's an interesting insight. In fact, we are seeing this play across businesses that the omni-channel approach or the combination of both an offline or in real life and an online presence is actually coming together. And especially COVID was probably an aberration where during a period of time we saw intense online adoption, but there's been some middle ground that is now we have settled into. Sudeep, you know, when we started our career in wealth management, my life used to revolve only in South Bombay or in a certain part of Delhi. Now, I find myself in Kanpur, in Nagpur, in Goa, in various parts of the country, because a lot of wealth creation has happened in tier 2 cities. And in many ways, it's also formalization of investing that is happening. You know a lot of your peers who've also built businesses like yourselves, which are very successful. What is actually happening in tier 2 India today that wealth managers are ending up here?
Luckily, with India growing and the leadership of this country saying we'll be the third largest economy in the world, so they have realized it will not be only with tier 1. And that is why, secondly, on a lighter note, we have now flights because you guys don't travel in train. So...
But actually, that's not true. I think my team travels by train for sure.
Not for 24 hours. I used to do travel to Bombay from Kanpur.
I'm sure.
For so many years. See, I think in tier 2, the wealth was always there. And I think it was more about being very conservative. What has happened, the second or third generation of tier 2 has traveled, got themselves educated abroad. Or in a nice institute, and then come back to their businesses. So they brought in a lot of exposure. Secondly, with the infrastructure development happening, a lot of people like you are able to travel and give us that knowledge on wealth management. Or across, I see so many people travel to Kanpur today for information technology, for digital marketing, for now not only in India, we see people traveling to our city with the most high-tech technology, high-tech machines from Japan, from Germany, from US, and they research us and they come to meet us, and we are able to incorporate those technologies in our organization. For example, we have a data analytics project going on in Goldie with a Japanese association.
Okay.
We are on cloud system, our entire data is on cloud in a data warehouse. We have been using Microsoft Business Central ERP for so many years now. We are entire sales team is on Salesforce automation. We have a online dealer management system. All our warehouses are connected. All the employees are technology driven. So from tier 1 cities, lot of companies found there was so much scope in tier 2 cities. And that is why the exposure of the next generation and the readiness to take risk and the vision to start locally but become global has impacted both ways. It's a journey both the ways.
I think very interesting points you made, Sudeep, and I want to go deeper into some of these points, especially the fact that investment into technology by the second generation. Now, typically when you're thinking of technology, the issue is that the returns come much later than the investment that is made. And at times, maybe the previous generation might have concerns around whether that is the right use of capital or not. So, in your own experience or what you've seen, how have second generation entrepreneurs like yourself gone about implementing technology in companies like Goldie?
So firstly, it was about, and I think it's a very, very valid question. And as a second generation entrepreneur, it wasn't easy. And I'll be very open about it. Because you have to work with employees or the family members who have seen you as a little child. Now, no matter how much you study, how much you work in the top multinational in the world, but once you come back, bole to bachcha to bachcha hi hai.
Kal ka ladka wala situation.
It's a challenge, and it's a very good challenge. It's I always use this quote: if you break the shell of a caterpillar, it will never become a butterfly. So that journey of earning trust, not only of the founders of the company, the people who have worked with the founders, and making them secure that if technologies will be incorporated, you will be a part of it. Either you will run it or the person who's running it will report to you. So to make them secure was our biggest task. And then the journey started. It was like first 15 overs of a one-day match was played by the elders. Then in the middle overs we came. So we have to stabilize the innings. And then if we are able to stabilize and not lose wicket in the middle overs, then the last 10 overs we are able to score more than 100 runs. So when we came in the middle overs, it was very important not to lose a wicket and just stabilize the entire innings in that. And that is when we were slowly inculcating that technology is important, more advancement is important, automation is important, infra is important. And if all these things are done, then maybe your second generation also, which has gone outside to study, can come back and work in your own company where you spent 20, 25 years.
Correct.
So this was the process what all the three brothers followed. Then by inculcating technology on a so many fronts, first was to consolidate and make a centralized database. And this was my first project when I came from US, was ERP. And when the base was formed, luckily we had second, third generation across our network. And then it just kept on going and going. And now we are focusing on AI, on SCADA systems, on IoT. All these things are happening now.
It's incredible. The other thing that you mentioned, Sudeep, was that the aspiration that typically second generation has is to take the business outside of a certain geography. In fact, in your case, take it global also. But there again, there is a mindset sometimes that why do we need to do all this when we are doing well already, right? The current business is profitable, it's doing well. Why do you want to invest in expansion? What is your advice to second generation entrepreneurs, and how do you go about convincing, let's say, the previous generation about this?
So coming back to the earlier discussion, it's about marathon. So if I know I cannot run 42 kilometers today, it will be a disaster if I even try to do that. I always believe to go global is really not required if you are not national. And then understand your strength. A very good teacher of mine in college told me, check the pulse, keep it alive. So we in Goldie took 43 years to go international. But not at the cost of our current market. We never have ego that wherever we travel, Goldie has to be there, but at the cost of the market or the sales or the network because of which we are surviving.
Mm-hmm.
We need to first stabilize, first need to make that a very strong growth path and then move to the new territories. So this is my advice. Again, nothing is a one-year game. It will take time, but the plan has to be very, very solid, where your basic ethical values, your basic principles, or your basic areas from where your sales are coming cannot be compromised at a cost of expansion to different territories.
Sudeep, in this journey of trying to expand, implement technology, you would have had many situations where that initiative has not worked out. For example, when you launched a product, the initial reaction is not positive. The question at that time is, do you persist with it? Do you pull back? What is your framework around correcting for what doesn't seem to be working?
So I think it's Pareto's rule everywhere. It's always 80-20, and 20% of the decisions contribute to the 80% of good results.
Correct.
We are growing by age. We are not same what we were 20 years back or 10 years back or 5 years back. So we always believe in Goldie that you have to change with time. Change with time means also change the understand the consumer behavior very much.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the products which you will launch will definitely not do good.
Mm-hmm.
In your industry, it is called fix a stop loss before investing.
Correct.
So we kind of do that. And every year we have a strategy of introducing new products, also removing few products. For example, last year we removed Sharbat as a category from our portfolio. We removed Jam as a category from our portfolio because people are health conscious.
Interesting.
And sugar and salt are the biggest phobia today.
Right.
So we understood that today's generation, firstly, it is not going to have time to take out a Goldie Rose Sharbat and mix it and have it, because a much better ready-to-drink product is available in the market.
Correct.
Next, how times have changed. People don't have time to cook curries in-house.
Mm-hmm.
So ready-to-cook is the new game.
Mm-hmm.
So I always believe strategy is not only about introducing new things, it is also about removing the old habits. And also about growth. It is not about what new you want to do or what new habits you want to achieve. It's also removing the old habits, some of them, to achieve the new habits.
I think this is very interesting because not enough is said about course correcting and removing, let's say, products in your bouquet which are no longer performing or no longer are relevant. One of the things you mentioned is about wealth managers and interacting and dealing with wealth managers more. When did you begin the financial investment journey at Goldie? When did that feeling happen that now you need to diversify away from a certain set of assets that you had?
So Sandeep, I've been very lucky, and luckily both my elders are very proactive. They introduced technology or computers in Goldie 1988. They introduced the first inkjet printing machine of India in 1994. It's a German company. So it was started by them again in the year, I think around 2006-7, around that.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody introduced to them and they said, let's give it a shot. So they always believed, let's try something new. We were always in the system of fixed deposits,
mm-hmm.
which you must know that every old business house used to have. And as a journey, it started, we saw the benefits. More than that, the learning we had
mm-hmm.
in whichever portfolio, whichever company, wherever we invested with the help of you people, we tried to understand those companies and also understand which sector is performing better, why it is performing better. And a lot of discussions made us understand how the people are reacting to different markets
mm-hmm.
and why are the some stocks or some companies going up and going down. Also the mistakes done by some companies which went very high and then eventually crashed.
Yeah.
So it is a long journey, probably 17 years now, and we've learned a lot in that process.
It's interesting, you know, this is the first time somebody is telling me about how the investment journey has educated them about various businesses which potentially they can use in their own business. In this whole journey, Sudeep, you've interacted with various wealth managers. What was the thing that that you look for in a wealth manager today when you decide to involve them in your wealth creation journey?
See, wealth is the most sensitive part for any entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of hard work put to create that wealth. So in Hindu undivided family or Indian law, your wealth goes to your wife and to your children.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing comes is trust and honesty and transparency. So wealth manager is like your family doctor,
mm-hmm.
which takes care of your financial health, ensures it is taken care of with you or without you for your next generation and also your friends and your business should. Business can have ups and downs, but wealth, whatever is being earned, has to be secured. So these three attributes, trust, honesty and transparency, I think are very important.
And when you, I mean, we were fortunate enough that you chose to work with us at Deserve. What were the things besides this that sort of made sense for you?
So these three attributes were definitely there with Deserve. And I can still say you still abide by it. More than that, why Goldie started as your first question, a commodity business into a branded business. What was the pain area was a lot of data that which we wanted or the reports
mm-hmm.
took time to come to us. We deserve the kind of digitization that you have done, the kind of readiness and real-time reports available to us in Deserve makes us very confident. The time has come where you don't want to wait for anything because it's a robust environment where decisions are made at a blink of an eye. And in today's time, no decision is made without data availability.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where I think Deserve has an edge, and I'm sure it will even evolve. The kind of study, the kind of statistical models utilized in my first interaction in Bombay, the historical data utilized, and not only with the qualitative analysis of a human, there was a lot of quantitative analysis done by the system, which was backed by the human qualitative analysis. So like a check system, I believe it's like today when you go for an eye test, they put you on machine and then they use the manual way and then they match it. So this is what Deserve has been doing.
Sudeep, I couldn't have described what we do better than how you have described it. It has been a pleasure. Thanks for hosting us at this very impressive Goldie office in Kanpur. Thank you so much.
Thanks. It's my pleasure. And I ensure whatever is said without any under pressure by anyone. Puri sachchai se aur bina kisi dabav ke maine bola jo bola.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Sudeep.